Okay, so we're dealing with lots of thorny ones this session. So the first one is, let's talk about dealing with criticism and blame. Okay, this is something that we really don't like at all. You know, in the eight worldly concerns, one of the pair of the eight worldly concerns is attachment to praise and approval and aversion to criticism and blame. And we are really holding on to that, you know. And what I think lies behind it is that we've never taken the time to really become our own friend. We've never taken the time to understand ourselves. And so we're always looking to other people to tell us who we are, how we should be, and so on. And then when they tell us who we are and we like it, then we're happy. When they tell us who we are and we don't like it, we blame them. When they project their stuff on us, we get confused and we think that's who we really are, so we get mad at them. Or we get mad at ourselves for being it. So I think a lot of it stems because we're not really in touch with who we are, and at the present, knowing that what we are is a constantly changing phenomena. And then also, we don't have a whole lot of self-acceptance. And so without that self-acceptance and self-knowledge, then we're very susceptible to anger when people blame and criticize us. Okay, so what I think is a good remedy for that is really getting to know ourselves. And, you know, the thing is, okay, when we were kids, you know, the adults in our life said, you're like this, you're like that. And we were kids. We believed it, you know, because we were young. We didn't have a lot of discriminating wisdom then. But the nice thing about being an adult is that now we can look back on the conditioning we had as kids, and we can actively discern what if that conditioning is useful and what if that conditioning is just a hallucination. And let it go. You know, we don't have to believe everything everybody says about us. Okay? So we can go back and look at the conditioning, the feedback that we got when we were kids. And, you know, sometimes, you know, people said mean things to us because they were suffering. And not because we were really like that, but because, you know, our parents were exasperated, and they're human beings, and they were venting on us. And I think any parent knows that that happens. You know, if you switch and you're in the role of the parent, you know that sometimes you lose it, and you say things that you don't mean to your kids. So if we can look at things that our parents may have said to us when we were young, with an understanding that, you know, they were human beings and they were doing the best they could. And we don't need to believe it now that we're grown-ups. Yeah? We can really stop and evaluate, am I like that or am I not like that? And if we are, you know, if we do have certain faults, then let's accept that we have those difficulties instead of denying them, and let's start working on them. And if we discover that we are not like that, then let go. You know, other people have their opinions. Their opinions are simply opinions. They're not reality. You know, we don't need to buy into them. So I think looking at what some of our buttons are that comes from the conditioning from when we were younger is very helpful. But this does not mean that we have to get into some big, you know, analytical review our childhood ad infinitum, ad nauseum process. In Buddhism, you know, it's quite different from therapy in many aspects. And, you know, nobody really, none of my teachers were interested in my childhood. You know, I mean, I would go in and, you know, try and talk about my childhood, this and that, and this and that. You know, my teachers completely, you know, would cut me off. And I realized that it took me a while, you know, because I was so bought into my story being me, to realize that my story isn't me, and that what was important is to look at my own emotional patterns, you know, and it's not a thing of reviewing my childhood, but to look at the conditioning I received and to look at my emotional patterns of reaction to that conditioning. Okay? And so in that way, it becomes more, I can deal with it better than if I'm, you know, making a story about my childhood and how it should have been different. It's like, okay, I got this conditioning. What about it was useful? What wasn't useful? What was true? What wasn't true? I deal with it that way. Then, what were my habit patterns in response to that conditioning? Do those habit patterns really work? Or do they just tie me in knots and make me more miserable? And doing some, you know, self-reflection on that. Okay, so looking at it in terms of patterns, in terms of conditioning, I think is much more helpful than constructing a big story. Okay, so in that way we come to understand, okay, what our conditioning was, what we can let go of, what our problems are right now, what our weaknesses are right now, and instead of denying them, let's just admit them. You know, I think this whole element of transparency is incredibly important for Buddhist practice, and that's an ability to say, yes, I have this difficulty, yes, I have this fault. You know, we're so habituated with, you know, somebody giving us some negative feedback and taking personal offense to it, that we just attack back and get angry, or we withdraw from the situation in our anger. And as we discussed last week, neither of those techniques really get us, you know, what we're wishing in the situation, and just create a whole lot of problems. But when we can actually accept, you know, that person's giving me that feedback, and you know what? I did that. You know what? I do have that fault. Why deny it? You know, there's nothing so bad about admitting we have faults. It's a very human thing. We don't have to feel that we're lesser than. We don't have to feel ashamed. We don't have to feel, you know, all this other stuff that we project on ourselves. It's just, yes, I have this fault. You know, yes, it's true. I interrupt people. You're right. You know? I mean, it's there. Instead of, you know, coming back with, well, what do you mean I interrupt people? You interrupt people more. And when I want to interrupt people, it's because I'm saying something important. You know, I mean, let's drop all that justification. You're right. I do interrupt people. I'm working on it. You know, I have to be patient with myself. Try and be patient with me. Keep reminding me when I interrupt people, because that way you'll help me correct this habit, because it's something I really want to work on. Okay? So it's just kind of more, you know, getting rid of our own feelings of shame and guilt. And, you know, yeah, we interrupt people. It's not the end of the world. It doesn't mean we're an evil person. Okay? So I learned something when I was in college. It's always stayed with me. I learned it from somebody. I don't think this person was Buddhist, but it was something that seems very Buddhist to me. And they were saying that when somebody criticizes you, yeah, stop and think about what they said. Don't react to the tone of voice. Don't react to the volume of the voice. Don't react to the vocabulary. Just look at the content, okay? Because lots of times what we're doing is we're getting mad at the tone of voice, the volume of the voice, you know, those things. Disregard that. Look at the content and ask yourself, is what they're saying true? Okay. Now, if what they're saying is true, then why get angry at it? Because it's true. What's there to get angry at if somebody says the truth? And we're always saying, hey, I want to work on myself. I want to become a better person. I want to become a Buddha for the benefit of all sentient beings. Here's somebody who's giving me some feedback that's actually very useful, telling me how to improve, you know? And so they're actually helping me do what my goal is, which is to transform myself. So instead of getting angry at them, I should put my palms together and say thank you, because they're telling me something useful. Also, if what they're telling me is true, it's, like I said, it's true, it's obvious, everybody knows it. What sense is there in denying it, or rationalizing it, justifying it, making up an excuse? Oh, I didn't really know, mama, mama, mama. You know, I mean, it's like everybody knows we're making up an excuse. Everybody knows what the truth is. Let's just say, yeah, you're right, because it's true. And that's, it's the same as if somebody is saying to us, you have a nose on your face. You know, we checked, we know we have a nose on our face. You know, in my case, it's a big one. What am I going to do? Put my hand over my nose and say, no, I don't have a nose. I don't have a big nose. Look at your own nose. You know, you're not looking at things straight. I mean, come on, I have a big nose. Everybody sees it. I know it. So why pretend, you know, and deflect the criticism when what the person says is true? I can just say, you're right. Like them saying you have a nose on your face. You're right. Okay? So that completely takes all the charge out of the situation. And, like I said before, if the criticism is right, okay, that applies to me, but it's not who I am. It's a habituated behavior. Okay? But my behavior is not me. And so I can begin to change my behavior. Or I can begin to look at the mind states behind that behavior and revise those mind states and in that way change the behavior. Okay? So no need to get angry if somebody criticizes me about something that's true. Same thing, if somebody criticizes me and what they say isn't true, again, there's no reason to get angry because what they said isn't true. Why get angry at something that isn't true? You know, it's what the person is saying is mistaken. If they had the correct information, they would say something else. You know, they're venting, they're exaggerating. What they're saying has nothing to do with me. Why get angry about it? It's like that person saying, you have horns on your head. You know, we pat our head, we check it out. No, there's no horns there. Okay, well, somebody says I have horns on my head. What they're saying is inaccurate. I don't need to get angry at it. It's not true. Okay? I can explain to them. I can even show them. Hey, look here. There's no horns. No reason to criticize me about this. So same way, if somebody, you know, gives me criticism and it's not true, sit down with them after the chart, you know, after they've calmed down, after, you know, they can listen a little bit better. Sit down with them and explain how we're looking at the situation and how, from our viewpoint, it looks like their criticism doesn't apply, you know, and, you know, see, maybe even we misunderstood what they were saying, you know, because, you know what I've also discovered is a lot of times we take things as criticism that the other person is not saying as criticism. And we notice this a lot living in community. Sometimes one person asks another person, you know, have you done that? Or, you know, do you have this information? And the person is just asking for information. They're not criticizing. But somebody will take it as, what? You're criticizing me because I haven't done that? You doubt me? You don't trust me? You know, and get into this big self, you know, defensive thing when the other person was just asking a question because they wanted some information. Okay? So I think it's, you know, we've all been in situations when the roles have been reversed, you know, where we've said something to somebody else, to a friend, and they've gotten really angry at us and we're sitting there scratching our heads saying, huh? What are they angry at? You know, I didn't mean any harm to them. So in the same way that we're sometimes stumped by other people's anger at us, you know, lo and behold, sometimes we misinterpret what the other person's saying and we get angry at something that was not at all meant as a criticism. The other person was just asking for information. Or the other person was just making a comment. But, you know, sometimes we're so ego-sensitive that we just take anything and everything personally, you know, in terms of how it relates to me. And so that is our problem. You know, our ego sensitivity is our problem. It's our button. You know, we're sitting there with a big red button that's sticking out halfway into the room, and it says, don't push me on it. But it's sticking out halfway into the room so that anybody who walks by, even though they don't touch it, just the movement of the air sets it off because we're so sensitive, you know. So, you know, we will fly off the handle, get really upset, think somebody's blaming us and criticizing us. Or we'll feel hurt, we'll feel put down, thinking somebody's, you know, putting us down. And they aren't. It's just that we are so sensitive that you know, anything anybody does, we take personally. And I saw this, a friend of mine, you know, it was such a like stark example for me. And this happened a number of years ago, and she had just had a baby. You know, when you have a baby, you put on weight. You're supposed to put on weight when you have a baby. Something's wrong if you don't. Okay, so, you know, she put on weight. She had her baby. She was nursing her baby, and she was going to take her baby back to see her family during the holiday season. And so we were talking about her going to visit her family, and she said to me, you know, I know that as soon as I get off the plane, my sister's going to look at me, and she's going to look at me, you know, my whole body, and say, oh, it looks like you've put on some weight. And my friend said that to me, you know, and you could just see she was already mad at her sister for criticizing her, even though her sister wasn't in the room. Her sister hadn't said that. Nothing had happened, but my friend was all primed to get really angry at her sister. Okay? And I'm sure that even if her sister didn't comment on her weight, she would take even her sister's greeting of, wow, you look great, to be ridicule. You know, oh, she's saying, wow, you look great. She really is teasing me and ridiculing me because I put on weight. You know, leave it to my sister. She doesn't say anything directly. You know, it's like if we are sensitive, we will find any reason possible to misinterpret somebody's comment and take offense at it. You know, and this is just our own ego problem. So I think it's very good to kind of look at habits in our life, look at patterns in our life when we've done this, and see our habit patterns, how they function to be overly sensitive about certain things. And recognize that that is the story I am making up. It's not coming from the other person. Okay? And that story is not true. Now, some stories we may say to ourselves, but it is true. You know, I am stupid. Well, wait a minute. Are we really stupid? Come on. You know, we all have some talents. We all have some abilities. We all know something. You know, it's totally unrealistic to have the self-image, I'm stupid. You know, that is a total hallucination. If we believe our own hallucination, we're causing ourselves misery. Okay, we have the Buddha nature. We can't say we're stupid. Okay, so you see, it's these ways of looking at what our buttons are, doing a lot of meditation, asking ourselves if what we think, if our own preconceptions are real, you know, seeing how they're false, and then keep reminding ourselves that these preconceptions or self-images of ourselves that set us up for anger are false. And we remind ourselves again and again and again and begin to let go of those buttons. You know, because our buttons are our responsibility. Now, we can't say to somebody else, you made me mad. You know, our buttons are our responsibility. Okay, so that's a little bit about handling blame and criticism. I'd like to move on and talk now about betrayal of trust, because that's another big one, you know. I know for me personally, you know, trust is like a really important thing in my life. And, you know, I'm all set and primed for, you know, small betrayals of trust. You know, so I know that's kind of my button. I'm working on it. But what I've also noticed is when when our trust has been betrayed, we always feel that we're the only person who has ever hurt this much. You know, when we're sitting in the middle of it, you know, somebody we trusted turns their back on us, or they trash us, or they don't come through for us, or whatever it is, you know, we feel like we're the only one who has ever experienced this kind of intense pain. But the thing is that I think everybody listening in on this conversation has experienced that pain. You know, we've all had our trust betrayed. We're not the only one. It's not a unique experience. This is universal that trust gets betrayed. Okay. It's interesting how, conversely, we never think of ourselves as people who betray trust, do we? You know, we always think of ourselves as, you know, sweet, well-meaning people who never intentionally harm somebody. And when somebody else accuses us of betraying their trust, we sit there with our jaw open, stupefied. Okay? It's quite interesting, you know, how we see ourselves as people who don't betray trust, but then our trust has always been betrayed. Okay. Interesting, isn't it? Are we seeing things accurately? So, you know, I think one step in the whole thing of betrayed trust is to see, hey, this is universal experience. Second question, ask ourselves, have I ever betrayed somebody else's trust? If we look at it, boy, we have, you know. I mean, we've dished out our fair share of criticism. We've let other people down when they've counted on us. Now, this is the whole idea of karma. So it's not something to feel guilty about, but it is recognizing that why am I in this situation of somebody betraying my trust? I created the principal cause, the karmic cause, by betraying other people's trust in the past. It could have been earlier this life. It could have been previous lives. But hey, you know, my energy got me in this situation. It's not just accidental. So if I don't like this result of people betraying my trust, then I have to really be more conscientious and try not to deliberately betray somebody else's trust. I need to really put in more effort to being reliable and to committing, you know, to analyzing things before I commit and making sure I can follow through on them. If I can't follow through, then letting the person know as soon as possible so that they can find other means to accomplish their goal. You know, I need to be more responsible and reliable myself. And if I do that, then I'm going to stop creating the cause for my own trust to be betrayed. Okay. So this is a good example of how to use our understanding of karma to prevent us from getting angry, from feeling hurt, from just acknowledging, yep, this is happening because of my own energy. And this way of looking at things also helps us to learn from our experience. So instead of just getting stuck in our pity party of somebody else betrayed me, to say, wow, there's something I can do. I can start being more reliable. You know, I can start, you know, being more careful about what I commit to. And I can start cherishing my own commitments more instead of being so fickle and so attached to my own pleasure that I abandon a commitment the moment that it ceases to bring me pleasure. You know, instead I'm going to hang in there more and really try and work things out. Okay? So I find this way of looking at things very, very helpful myself for really dealing with situations where trust has been betrayed. Also, something that I've done when trust has been betrayed and I've been very upset and angry about it is, again, stop and really ask myself, what are my buttons in this situation? What was I expecting? And, you know, even write it all down, list it all out. You know, I'm really sensitive about being abandoned, so I expect nobody in this universe to abandon me. Well, is that very realistic to expect nobody in the universe to abandon me? Hey, you know, or, you know, I expect people to, well, just this basic thing I was talking about before, I expect people to think about commitments deeply before they make them and then follow through on their commitments. I expect that out of people. Well, okay, I might expect it, but is it realistic to think that everybody's always going to come through? No, it's not realistic, because things happen. And sentient beings do sentient being things. Meaning, sentient beings sometimes are not so reliable. Sentient beings have fickle minds. They change their minds. You know, that doesn't mean that we get cynical about them. It doesn't mean we go to the other extreme and we're cynical and we don't trust anybody. But it just means that in our view of the world, our whole broader mental outlook, you know, we may expect people to value commitments, but we also know, we should also expect, because we know, that sometimes people don't. Okay? So, here's a situation of somebody not valuing a commitment. This is part of my spiritual development to learn to accept this. Okay? Instead of rebelling against people doing, sentient beings doing what sentient beings do, my job is to learn how to accept this. Why? Because, you know, if you're following the Mahayana path, you know, we want to become Buddhas for the benefit of all sentient beings. If we're going to be Bodhisattvas and Buddhas, and we're going to work for the benefit of all sentient beings forever, we have to be able to have a very strong mind that is able to put up with sentient beings doing a lot of really stupid, ridiculous things. And we have to be able to put up with sentient beings betraying our trust and criticizing us and abandoning us and turning their back on us. Why? Because this happens in samsara, you know? So if we are really aspiring bodhisattvas, and we, you know, it's like I look at the bodhisattva ideal, I have tremendous inspiration. I really want to be like that. It's like, what a better thing to do in my whole life than to generate bodhicitta, a name for Buddhahood. Well, if that's something I really value, then when this person betrays my trust, or this person betrays me, criticizes me, or this person doesn't fulfill their commitments, this is my opportunity to learn to be patient with sentient beings. And if I'm going to work for sentient beings from now until enlightenment, I'm going to have immutable, firm patience that doesn't budge no matter how people treat me. So this small thing that somebody's doing right now, this is good practice, you know, because I'm going to face bigger betrayals later on when I'm actually a bodhisattva. So I better get used to small things now when I'm not a bodhisattva. And this person's giving me the opportunity to just accept what samsara is and what sentient beings do in samsara and not take their betrayal of trust personally. You know, it's not because of me. It's not that because I'm deficient that they're doing this. It's because they're hurting. I mean, really, that's the bottom line, isn't it? Why does somebody not come through for somebody else? Because they're confused and they're hurting. Why? Because they're in samsara. They're in cyclic existence. It's not even their fault, so to speak. So when we look at it this way, we can just stop blame altogether. It's not my fault. It's not their fault. This is the nature of cyclic existence. My duty as an aspiring bodhisattva is to learn to have completely stable, unchangeable equanimity and patience in this kind of situation. And this person is giving me a wonderful chance to really develop that bodhisattva quality. And I find when I really think like that, you know, change the whole way I look at the situation, that then the pain, the hurt goes away. When the hurt goes away, the anger isn't there anymore. Okay. So that's a little bit about hurt. So I'll just start speaking a little bit about judgment, because I probably won't get through it. We'll have to stop midway. But the judgmental mind, because the judgmental mind is really gets us into a lot of trouble. And I call the judgmental mind the sportscaster mind, because it's the mind that just sits there. And as we look at everybody, we have so many opinions about them. You know, you're standing in line at the bank or at the grocery store, and you look at the people around you. How come they cut their hair like this? How come their hair is this color? Why do they part their hair like this? This person's fat. This person's too thin. This person's too tall. I wonder what it's like to be like them. This person's good looking. Whoa. This person, you know, looks disagreeable. This one looks angry. That one looks depressed. This one, you know, constant mental chatter with all our opinions about people who are perfect strangers. Okay? And we have all these judgments about people. I mean, let alone people we know, just people who are perfect strangers. We judge them up, down, and across, having this constant mental chatter full of our opinions, and then we think that's who they are. And then that kind of judgmental mind, you know, feeds right into anger, doesn't it? Because none of our opinions give credit to other people for their good qualities. We sit there and like to pick at what we don't like, okay? And then we get angry at it. So again, this is our own mental formation, forming all these opinions, most of which are negative, and then believing in them. And so what I find as a very good antidote to this is when I'm in the situation where my mind's starting with sports casting, this one's doing this one's doing that, to stop, press the pause button on that, and just look at others and say, you know, this is a sentient being who wants to be happy, who doesn't want to suffer just like me. Doesn't matter what they look like, yeah? Doesn't matter they're the same racial group, same ethnic group, same religious group. Doesn't matter whether they're old or young, attractive or unattractive. You know, doesn't matter whether they're human or non-human even. The unifying characteristics about all sentient beings is we want to be happy and we don't want to suffer. That's the bottom line. So if I can look into somebody's heart and see that, then I can relate to everybody, you know, on that heart-to-heart level, really knowing that we're exactly the same way, the same in that respect. And when we do that and we connect to people on that heart-to-heart level, there's no space for the judgmental mind. So all the anger that comes from that judgment ceases. Okay. Also, when we connect with people, seeing how we and them are exactly the same, then we stop feeling alienated. We stop feeling like, oh, they're all part of a group, and they all understand each other, and I don't fit in. You know, because we do this all the time, too. This is another way we get ourselves angry. You know, we develop this preconception, oh, they're all really close, and I don't fit in. And so we get angry at them. We feel, you know, left out. We feel hurt. We avoid them because, well, if they don't like me, I don't like them. And on and on and on. And that's simply because we make up these incorrect stories through our judgmental mind. And so just pressing the pause button on that, coming back, and you know, all these are sentient beings wanting happiness, not wanting suffering. They're exactly like me. And if we see that, we can communicate with everybody. We can relate to everybody. You know? So this is actually a very good meditation, a very good way to think, to handle our own bias and our own prejudice. Okay? Because what is bias and prejudice doing? It's making up false stories about people. And we all have bias and prejudice. We might as well admit it. Okay? So, but let's work at it and try and see into people's hearts. And then we really feel like we can connect with them. And this too, like everything else, we need to constantly remind ourselves of it again and again and again and again. So right now, as a way to end, let's just sit quietly for a couple of minutes, and then I'll lead you in a dedication, okay? So while we're sitting quietly right now, just review some of the major points that you heard so that you'll remember them again and you'll continue to think about them again. as a way to close with our dedication, then let's rejoice that we were able to spend this time together and think of all the positive energy, positive potential that we created through listening and thinking about the Dharma and transforming our minds. And let's send this out to all the sentient beings, all the living beings everywhere. We can even imagine it as light radiating from our heart as we give the results of our good actions away to others, as we give the positive potential away to them, with aspirations that we all can live peacefully within ourselves and live peacefully together and become Buddhists.